Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We're going to get started here. Let you know right now, this is Friday early edition, so it looks like calls and questions are really light right now. I was hoping to record 2 hours today. We'll record 2 hours or until we run out of questions. But I can tell you right now, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all you want to get through on, press 1 on your phone. And I promise we will get to you. If you wait, sometimes the calls and questions build up, but right now you could certainly get through. So let's get started.
The road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, and the list goes on and on. In fact, if you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. A couple weekends ago, we did a special on quarterly maintenance, something we're going to do more often. And I created a checklist of things you should be looking at maintenance-wise on your truck every quarter. Now, not everything on the list, you're not going to do it every quarter. Some of the things on the list were reminders that happen at 500,000 miles or 750,000. Some of the things on the list you should be doing every quarter. And if you've never done these things, you should probably go through the whole list. Now, you can find that list. We created a free download of the checklist, and you can find it at letstruck.com. Look up in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see it. It's called a maintenance checklist. And download that, go through it. But I wanted to just touch on a couple things because we've been all over the country. We're on a road trip. We're back in Oregon now. But I'm waking up to colder mornings. It's that time of year. And now is really the time to get your truck ready for winter. Now, there were a lot of things on the checklist to go through, and again, go download it at the website. But I want to remind you about a couple things that are critically important heading into winter. The electrical system, coolant system. So there's an entire checklist about the electrical system itself. And when you work through that, you'll see it's pretty in-depth, a lot of things to look at. And this is the time to really go through that. Talks about cleaning up posts, checking cables, checking connections, cleaning and covering everything with dielectric grease, checking battery load and battery voltage. Another really important thing, and now would be the time to do it, is get a Maxwell engine start module. There is nothing else like this. If you haven't heard me talk about this technology, it's very cool. We've been working with this company for a couple years now. We absolutely love it. So what will happen is you've typically got four batteries on your truck. You take one battery out and you replace it with a Maxwell engine start module. It looks like a battery. It's the same size as a battery. I think it weighs like 17 pounds. It's really light. Because it's not a battery. It's an ultracapacitor, and it's what's called an engine start module. So just a real quick battery lesson. Batteries are heavy because they are loaded with lead, and then we put acid in them to create a chemical reaction, and that's why it's called a lead-acid battery. We have lead in the battery. We put acid in, and that creates and stores the electricity. Lead-acid batteries will deteriorate time the more they get charged and discharged. And some people, we've gone to gel batteries, and there's glass mat batteries and some different technologies, but you usually end up giving up something. There's two things we're looking for in a battery. One is what's called cold cranking amps. The other is just storage, amp hours, how, you know, deep cycle batteries as opposed to, you know, starting batteries. And most batteries are somewhere in between. You have to give up one to get the other. If you have deep cycles, better storage, you're usually giving up some cold cranking amps and vice versa. So the beauty of the Maxwell is that it does one thing and does it really well. And what it does really well is start your vehicle. So not only is the technology different, and I'll talk about that in a minute, the way we install the battery is different. The Maxwell, the start module, will only get wired to the starter itself. It is isolated from everything else on the truck. And that's so that there are no other currents drawing on that battery. So unless you totally disconnect your batteries, there's usually always some sort of a draw. Refrigerators, computers, all kinds of things are drawing on those batteries all the time. So they are constantly being charged and discharged, which is what shortens the life of a battery. Start module is only wired to the starter. It's isolated from everything else. Now, it's also wired, and this gets a little confusing, it is wired to the other three batteries, but only in one direction. The start module can pull power from those batteries, but the batteries can't pull power from the start module. So the start module is only providing power to the starter, and it's pulling power from the other batteries. The easiest way to describe this is instead of lead acid technology that takes a long time to charge and then a long time to discharge fully, the start module works on static electricity. So if you've ever rubbed a balloon against your head and then stick it to the wall, or, you know, when it's cold and dry and you touch something and you get a spark, static electricity can be built up rapidly and then it can be released rapidly, and that's what this battery or this start module does. We can charge it extremely quickly, minutes or less, and then it discharges all of that power quickly. So instead of, say, 800 or 900 cold cranking amps like a battery might have, this has, I think it's 1,900. So your truck will fire up. You've got to hear it to experience it. It's pretty amazing. And can do multiple starts with the start module, run it totally out of power, turn the key off, and it will pull power from the other batteries, and it'll do it again. Just keep starting over and over and over. So you will never be left without power to start the truck. If you do, which is pretty rare, but I've tested it for letting it sit months at a time, and the start module will eventually lose its charge. If you've ever tried to jump start four dead truck batteries, you know it's pretty difficult. If you pull a car over there, you can do it, but you're going to sit there a long time for those batteries to absorb enough energy to start the truck. With the start module, what I carry around is one of the little car jump start packs. So you can fit these in the side box. They're not very big. And you just connect that little jump start pack to the Maxwell, and the truck will fire right up. Even if the batteries are dead, your Maxwell's dead. It's pretty amazing. So highly recommend that. The other thing that you could be thinking about doing this time of year is changing over to a winter weight oil, and I highly recommend synthetic. If you get a 1540 synthetic or a 530 synthetic, your truck will start much better in the cold weather. So between the Maxwell engine start module, which you can get in our store, by the way, at letstruck.com/store, we can ship one of those right out to you. They're fairly easy to install. If you are mechanical, you can do it yourself. It's a little more difficult than a battery because you have to put in a couple other cables, but pretty easy to do. Again, you can get it right in our store, letstruck.com/store. Between the start module and the synthetic oil, your truck will start all winter long like it is a warm summer day. Pretty amazing. The other thing, obviously, look at the cooling system. This would be a great time to do a coolant sample, and you can get those in our store as well. So we wanted to make sure that you knew what kind of things you should be doing to get your truck ready for winter and make those easily available in the store. One other product I would highly recommend, and we don't have that in the store. I should probably work on this, though. It's a product called AutoSock. Now, it replaces chains, and most states with chain laws actually now allow the AutoSock as an alternative traction device, I think is the term they use. But even if you don't run the states that require chains, the AutoSock is something great to have in the wintertime. They're like a fabric wheel cover, and they have as good or better traction than chains. They're really light. They don't take up any space, throw them in a bag. And if you get stuck or get in bad weather somewhere, icy roads, you can throw them on anywhere. Really amazing. They'll get you out of a parking lot if you're stuck. So check those out. You can find them online. You can find them in some truck stops out west as well. We're going to get to a break, and then we're going to come back to your calls and questions. Don't forget, download that checklist at letstruck.com. It's free. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Go and download your maintenance checklist. Check out the store while you're there. Most of the things I talk about you can get there, and we're always adding new stuff. We're going to get to some phone calls. We're starting off in Florida today. Richard, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. I'm fixing to try to start the ketogenic diet. And I'm
okay.
Looking into it and everything, been watching some videos on it. I've been hearing you talk about eating high fat and low carbohydrates, right?
Correct.
Or is it low protein? Okay. On the fat deal, I know you talk about pork fat and beef fat, but because of my religion, does not allow me to eat animal fat. Now, am I able to get that fat in other sources like avocados or coconut oil and stuff like that? Or do
you
I need
can.
To? Is it something? Okay.
Now, you can do it, and I've actually read some books and some reports on being ketogenic. So you are a vegetarian then, right?
No, I eat meat, but I just don't eat animal fat. As far as like the fat. Now, whenever you talk about the fat, are you talking about the fat that's around the meat, or are you just talking about fat that's in the meat?
Well, the thing is, when you're ketogenic, your main source of energy is fat. So we try to get fat everywhere we can, and actually animal fats are healthy, but it helps that you do eat the meat. So what you're saying is you just trim it. So any meat,
right,
for the most part, also has fat within the muscle. Now, some cuts are really, really lean, but some cuts are more marbled. So what you're saying is you
right.
can eat the protein, you just trim any excess fat. Is that right?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Okay, so what you want to do then is you want to look, this is kind of weird, you want to look for fattier cuts where the fat is within the muscle, like short ribs. Even if you trim the fat from the edges, there's more fat in that muscle. So this makes it a little easier because you are still getting the nutrients from the animal protein. Now, any other restrictions? What about, like, organ meats?
About what? Oh, that I'm not too sure of. I know I don't eat liver or anything because I just don't like the taste of liver.
Right.
I believe we can't eat liver. I just don't. We don't eat no pork products or anything like that. So that, basically, all we stick with is venison and beef meat.
Okay. All right, so, yeah, you can make up the fats in other ways. Nuts, olive oils, any problem with eggs? Any restriction on eggs?
No restrictions.
Okay. Eggs are excellent sources of fat. Coconut oil is a great source of fat. Avocados, salmon, or any fatty fish, if you eat, seafood or any fatty seafoods, that's another great source. Butter is an excellent source. So you can go ahead.
Okay. I was going to ask you on the fish. Now, I know salmon is a good source of fish. What about freshwater fish like brim, perch, bass? Stuff like that. Is that just as good as that or not?
Well, those are good sources of protein, but they're not very high in fat. Most whitefish is very lean, and one of the things you do have to be careful on the ketogenic diet, obviously everybody gets the carbs. We cut carbs as low as you can comfortably cut them, and there is no bottom. And what I mean by that is your body does not need any carbohydrates at all. Now, to eat zero carbohydrates is almost impossible, but if you did it, there's no downside. Your body doesn't need those. Protein, on the other hand, you do need. We just have to be careful we don't get too much protein, or your body converts it to glucose and you might as well be eating the carbs. So I always look for sources of fat that have... My rule of thumb is if I can find twice as much fat as protein in a food, that's an excellent source. The other end of that spectrum is I don't want it to be more than 1-to-1, meaning I don't want the food to have more protein than fat. And if I find that, like a lean fish, if I were to eat a lean fish, I would actually do something like poach it in butter. Or put a lot of butter on it. Make sure, or olive oil. You know, olive oil on fish can be really good too. So I would make sure that if I'm eating a lean white fish, I would make sure that meal had a lot of extra fat. So I might do some steamed vegetables with a ton of coconut oil or butter. And then the fish is good protein. The reason salmon is so good, two things. One, it has a lot of omega-3 oils, which is what we want. And it's about the fattiest fish you can eat. So you're getting good protein, good omega-3s, and really good fats. So, yeah, you can still do this even though you're going to, you know, trim more fat, not eat the pork fat. You've just got to seek out those other fats.
Right. Now, is there an app that could help monitor the intake of the proteins, the fat, the carbohydrates, and all that you would recommend on as far as keeping track of how much your intake is?
You know, there's a bunch of them. The one I was using was, I think I found it because of my Fitbit band. So my Fitbit would connect to it. What is the name of that app? Hold on, let me look at my phone, see if I still have it. I you know, after a while, you get to the point where it's not that hard to track anymore. So after doing it for, I don't know, maybe a month or so, I stopped tracking. I mean, I know, I know now when I'm eating, you know, enough fat, when my protein's right, carbohydrates are easy because I just try to eat the least amount possible. The app that I was using, it was called MyFitnessPal. And it's got a huge database of food, and you can even use your phone to scan a barcode, and the barcode will bring up all of the nutritional information. And then you just say, okay,
oh, wow,
here's what I had for lunch. Yeah, it's very cool. So, you know, if it's a food that has a barcode, you snap a picture of the barcode, and it enters all the protein, carbohydrates, fat, vitamins, all kinds of things. And then all throughout the day, you can even set limits and say, okay, I want to eat, you know, no more than 30 grams of carbohydrates, 90 grams of protein, this many grams of fat. And throughout the day, you can just look on your app and see where you are.
And that's MyFitnessPal?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Cool. I'll look that up. And I guess that's it. I just want to ask you about that. I sure appreciate throwing all that.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Call me back and let me know how it's going, because I will tell you, it is a major, major life change. When you go from burning carbohydrates and sugars to burning fat, everything changes. So call me and let me know how it's going or any other questions. Let's go to Texas. Cheryl, welcome to the program. Cheryl, are you with me? Oh, going once.
Hello?
I can hear somebody back there. Cheryl,
hi.
Yes, it's your
Kevin?
Turn. Welcome.
Hi.
Yeah.
My car picks up my calls on me. Hey,
oh,
I got a couple comments and a quick question.
Sure.
First, I wanted to say thank you and kudos to you and your team for over the weekend. They reached out to me when I sent that email with all those questions and hooked me up with you. And that was just, I felt like that was going the extra mile, and I appreciate it. And then Blog Talk cut us off, but I wanted to thank you for the encouragement. We were high as kites when we left your Blog Talk cut us off. And we got our approval from Landstar. And we're waiting on approval for our truck loan.
Wow.
And it's all coming together. I was going to
Well, that's exciting.
If you thought it would be helpful, I've got a big rig cash flow summary template for Excel. Oh.
Kevin? Okay.
Dang, it did it again. Did you catch all that?
I did. You were breaking up a little bit, but I think I got it all.
Okay. So I'd love to share the template at minimum, if that's something that you think you might be able to use and pass around. If anyone's curious, you know, I did a business plan that it doesn't match. Like, you go to the Small Business Association, it says marketing and sales, you know, and I just did something geared around our industry. I can pull out the personal information, but it might help somebody looking for ideas on how to even get that started. I'd be willing to share that, plus the cash flow summary that we...
Let me put you on hold. The music's playing. You can send all of those to support@letstruck.com, and they'll get them over to me. We're going to get to a break. We'll come right back with more of your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Before the break, I was talking with Cheryl in Texas. Cheryl, go ahead.
Hi. And then a quick question. We're looking at the pre-emissions trucks, and we came across a Volvo that looks real good. It's a 2000, but it's got an auto shift. Low miles, good price, really clean, and we just don't know much about those older automatic transmissions. It's got the filter on the floor. Is that something that could be converted to like a 13-speed?
Is it a two-pedal or a three-pedal? Does it have a clutch?
It has a clutch.
Okay, that makes it a little, yeah, that makes it a little easier. Both of them can be converted, but if you don't have the clutch, then it's a lot more work and a lot more parts. And but if the clutch is already there, yeah, if the clutch is already there, it's easier. So plus the two pedals actually use a centrifugal clutch, which is very different from, you know, the clutch we need for a manual transmission. Here's what I would say. I had some of the early auto shifts. When they work, I really like them because it really is a manual transmission. It's the same. I'm assuming it's an Eaton, right, not a Meritor.
You know, that's a good question. I have to look. So let's
okay,
assume
it'll,
it's an
it'll,
Eaton.
Yeah, and it probably is. That is the same 10-speed or 13-speed transmission that we have been
okay.
shifting with the stick forever. The only difference
okay.
is they put some electronics and some actuators on it, and the computer shifts the transmission for you. That's why
okay.
we call it an auto shift, not an automatic, and that's why it still has a clutch. So you put it in gear, push in the clutch, put it in gear, let out, and then it does the rest until you come to a stop again. So
okay.
changing those over is pretty easy. I think in most models, you don't even have to change the transmission. You can build on top of, because all the gears, everything is the same.
Uh-huh.
You just got to take the top end apart where all the actuators are and put the mechanical parts back in. But what I would say is just drive it. I mean, if the downside to them is that if electronics get funky, sometimes they're hard to troubleshoot. So they can leave you sitting somewhere where they won't go into gear or they get stuck in a certain gear. It doesn't happen all that often, but when it does, it's kind of frustrating. I would say
okay.
run it as the auto shift and then, you know, get some estimates on converting it over. But if the electronics work, I actually like them better than a manual because you've got the option. You can drive it as an auto shift, or you can just put it in manual and you shift with the button.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. So I got time for one little comment. I know you said
sure.
you're a little shorter on calls. Back in December, you were talking about the importance of setting goals and, more importantly, about writing them down. And you said that you have this exercise you do every year at the beginning of the year where you kind of chart out what things are going to look like, you know, over the next year or by the end of the year. Well, evidently,
right.
I did that. Because I came across
okay.
with my journal entry for January 1st, and this was a couple of months ago, but out of the five things that I wrote down, now they weren't, some of them weren't measurable per se, but I was just creating a picture. Out of the five things,
yeah.
I had accomplished three, and the fourth was measurable, and I wasn't even trying, and I accomplished that. The fifth one is buying our truck, and that's
what,
about
and
to happen.
You're
and
close.
I never looked at it.
You know,
yeah, I forgot.
And here's the amazing thing, because I've been doing this for years. So writing it down just one time is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
People call me all the time and say, wow, I sat down and I did that. And, you know, I look back and now I've done it. So imagine how powerful it is if you write it down once and review it every month or every week. Or what if you actually
every
did
morning.
It every day? Every
yeah.
morning. And what is it? What does it take you, 2 or 3 minutes while you're having your coffee? You know, I've done it over the years. In fact, one of my, kind of the one that I'm most proud of, it was pretty amazing. And I've told the story many times. In fact, I just told it at my seminar again in GAX. On the way home from giving my first seminar ever in 1997, I heard about satellite radio. I actually read it in a Barron's magazine. And on the way home, I sat there thinking, I just did a seminar where I answered a bunch of questions. Here's this new technology where truck drivers will be able to have the same channel everywhere all over the country. How amazing is that? And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a radio show where I could answer questions from truck drivers? That was 1997, and I wrote it down as a goal in April. My show went live in April of 2007, 10 years. But that goal,
wow.
I still have it in a journal. Yeah, I still have it in a journal where I wrote that down and started working towards it. And then I thought to myself, boy, you idiot, why didn't you read that one every day? Why didn't you read it once a week, instead of once a year? You know, I probably would have gotten a whole lot sooner. But just the power of writing it and reviewing it once in a while is amazing. And if you write something like that and look at it every day, you'll find ways to accomplish it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great stuff.
Well, again, thank you
for
everything. And we'll be calling again when we got a couple trucks picked out. And we should be rolling by November is our goal. So everything seems to be
excellent.
On track. And thanks for everything you do.
You're welcome. Can't wait to help you on the trucks because it's getting exciting. You've done all the hard work. Now some of this is the fun part, picking trucks, buying trucks, getting them ready to go on the road. But you've done the hard work first, so congratulations. Let's head off to Arizona. Rusty, welcome to the program.
Hey, I was calling about getting some steer tires. It's time to do that. And I've got the XZA 3 Pluses, but I'm considering going to the RY 617s for cost as well as for rolling resistance. Is there any reason not to?
Not necessarily, but let's talk about a couple things. One, the rolling resistance, as much as I talk about it, on the steer tires, that important. And the reason I say that, it's important, but almost every good steer tire is in that range of 100 to 110. There isn't even 10 points between them. And on the steer axle, 10 points isn't even a half of a tenth of a mile per gallon. So there's virtually no difference in fuel economy between, you know, the top five all-position tires. So as much as I talk about rolling resistance, we don't have to make it a big factor when we're putting the tires on the steer axle. So then what I look for is handling, wear, those kind of things. The XZA 3 Plus, the tire you have right now, hands down, is the best steer tire on the market. Nothing else even comes close, in my opinion, for handling, for wear, for so many things. So I'm kind of a fanatic about tires. Tires are something I will not skimp on. I've done it over the years to try to save a little money, and I'm always disappointed. So I always go back to just spending the extra money up front and getting the best steer tire I can. So nothing wrong with the Yokohama. I know a lot of people that run it, they like it. For me, it's not worth saving a little bit of money.
Okay. Sounds good.
You're welcome. And it really, you know, steer tires last us a long time these days, especially that XZA 3 Plus. I have people getting 250,000 miles out of that tire. It handles well. It holds up well. So it's short-term savings when you try to save a little bit of money on a steer tire. Let's go to Colorado. Mike, welcome to the program. Mike, are you with me?
Oh, here we go. Yes, sir. I have an oil sample.
All right. Let's take a look at it here and see what we've got. Tell me a little bit about the truck. What year and what engine?
It's a 2010 ISX. Unfortunately, I did an in-frame in March. So we're looking at the oil sample has about 44,000 miles on the in-frame and about 11 on the oil.
Okay. Let me, the music's playing. Let me get to a break. I'll take a look at this, and we'll come back and talk about it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Don't forget to download your maintenance checklist. It's free. It's a PDF download. You can find it at letstruck.com. All right, a quick heads up here. We're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour. So at the end, I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all those things. I got to get out of here. We're going to come back and do another hour, so don't go away. I'm looking at the calls and questions. Right now, questions are light. In fact, I don't have enough to get us through a second hour. We'll go ahead and start it, and if we run out of questions, we'll just quit. But now would be your chance. If you've ever wanted to get through, press 1 on your phone right now, and I'll get to you. If you wait any longer, it's hard to say. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. I'm heading back to Colorado. Mike, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good news. Whoever did the in-frame looks like they did a good job on it. The engine went back together well, seems to be running well. It was a really clean sample for this early after an in-frame, and there's nothing to indicate that anything's going wrong.
Absolutely, yeah, it looked good. And my question would be then, when would I take my next sample? I'm currently at 21,000, almost 22,000 on the oil right now. It's a Schaefer 1040.
Yeah, your time. I don't like to go more than 25,000 between samples. Most engines today, especially if we're running a bypass filter like an EcoPure, we're safe to 25,000. I don't like to go past that because if something does go wrong, even when we have an engine that's showing up really clean every time at 25,000, some people want to extend. I don't mind extending oil drains. I'll run, you know, the same oil for 500,000 miles if it keeps coming back clean. But I don't like to extend those oil samples because if something goes wrong, an injector, a coolant leak, whatever, we need to know that, and that's how we know by doing the sample. So if you're at 22,000, it's time to take it. I mean, any time in the next week or so. You really don't want to go any longer than that.
Okay, all right, real good. And on the start modules, I've got 8 batteries. I've got 4 for my APU and then 4 for the rest of the truck. So would I need 2 start modules or just 1?
Just 1, and what you would do then is you could literally use the start module to start the truck, and you could, depending, you could wire all 7 batteries to provide shore power or however you want to do it. But 1 start module will start the truck, and then the rest of the batteries can be used for your hotel loads.
I gotcha. All right, real good. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. The start module is probably one of the coolest new technologies I've found in a couple of years because it was just so different than everything else. You know, we've picked up some great products lately. The Flow Below, which you can find in our store as well. Some cool stuff, but the engine start module is such cool technology. and you will literally, you can forget about jump starts. You will be able to start your truck all winter long. Like I said, at the very worst case scenario, you carry around one of those little jump start packs, and you'll be able to start the truck right up. Now, that only, I only needed that jump start pack if I let the truck sit for a couple months. If I let it sit for 2 or 3 weeks, it'd fire right up with the start module. So if you're on the road and you're using it, and you know, at the longest you might let it sit over the weekend or a week, you probably will never need your jump start module. But it's a nice thing to have around. Which, by the way, the jump start module would be completely worthless if you have four standard batteries. You're never going to get that little jump start module to do anything. But with the engine start module, the Maxwell, that little jump start module is all we need, even if everything goes dead. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Kansas. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
What can I help you with today?
Got a question. I'm not getting ready to purchase a new glider. Looking at the Coronados and the Columbias. Just curious about what the difference in aerodynamics would be between the two. And part of the question is the Columbia does not have the side skirts on it. So I just got
okay.
a fuel tank right up to the door, and then I got the big gap before I get to the quarter fender. And then, of course, the Coronado, you got the boxes down the side. So.
Yeah, you know, the difference between, if everything else is equal, it's around 3 to 5 tenths in favor of the Columbia. The Coronado, you're going to lose at least 3 tenths and as much as a half. You know, when we built the Signature truck, we used the Coronado. We knew we were giving up a little bit of fuel economy. We pulled the exhaust out, you know, and put it behind once we did a weed burner. That helps quite a bit. The Coronado isn't as bad as a Classic, but it's not as good as the Columbia.
Right.
You're going to give up about 3 tenths, and all you're really getting is the exterior look. I mean, the interior is identical. You can even do, if you're ordering it, you can even do all the upgraded interior parts like are standard on the Coronado, and they're all interchangeable. I mean, the inside of those trucks are identical. So, you know, the Coronado was more common in the glider, and I really think the only reason it was is because that's what Fitzgerald chose to build. I mean, that's what they would order hundreds of. They'd like to build them. But really, the Columbia, if you're looking for the best fuel economy, is a better choice.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I am. I considered resale a little bit, but yeah, you answered my question. That's what I was, just how much in fuel miles is what I was concerned with.
Yeah, let me just address the resale question pretty quick. If you were going to sell this truck in 2 or 3 years, you might break even on resale because you're going to lose a couple $1,000s every year in fuel cost. But if we look at, you know, the way to make money with a truck, you run it to at least 1 million miles. And then if you really want to make money, you do your in-frame and you run it another 500,000 miles. But if you sell a truck at 1 million plus, resale is meaningless. Anything with 1 million miles is going to sell for $15,000 or less. That's just the market. So by that time, resale just isn't even a factor.
I agree. But I will tell you this. I just recently totaled my Coronado glider, and the insurance company valued it at $84,000 with 700,000 miles on it.
Wow. That's crazy.
I thought so too.
Yeah, wow.
So they were definitely holding the value in the insurance's eyes anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, the glider itself, kind of crazy, and this is the weird, you know, resale thing. Gliders used to have horrible resale value. Now it's the opposite. Now the gliders, used gliders, are holding a premium value because everybody wants them. Not everybody has the budget to go build a new glider, but they want gliders. I mean, I'd love to buy gliders 2 or 3 years old. That's the best value going right now, but they are really starting to hold their price well. I think I can squeeze in one more call before we've got to get out of here. Let's go to Virginia. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi. What can I help you with today?
I have a question. Recently, my trailer was stolen with the cargo on it, step deck. And the insurance is settling, and I'm not getting how much I think I should, but I don't know. Anyways, what do I do with that money? How do I do that on taxes when it comes? What would happen?
Okay, you will treat it exactly like you sold the asset. So it doesn't matter really what you owed. That has nothing to do with anything. What we do is we take the price you paid for the trailer. We subtract anything that has been depreciated. So when did you buy this trailer? What year?
Well, I bought it in 2011 and paid like $18,500, and they're settling for $14,000 right now, $14,000-something. 14, 17, or something like that.
You did okay. I mean, you owned that trailer for a long time for next to nothing. I mean, it cost you almost nothing to own that trailer.
Well, yeah,
what'll happen, and it got stolen in 2015, right?
Yeah, it's paid off. I just paid it off in April.
Right. The payoff has nothing to do with anything, so I don't want to even talk about that because it'll just confuse people. The payoff has nothing whatsoever to do with this calculation. So you paid 18-something. We don't need the exact numbers. You have depreciated most of that trailer. You'll still get your depreciation for 2015. You had a half a year left in 2016. Which means you were probably down to a book value of about $2,000 or $3,000. When you get the insurance settlement, it's like selling it for $14,000. You're actually going to have a recapture of depreciation of about $10,000. That's going to add about $2,500 to your tax bill. That is actually a taxable event, just like you sold it. I'm all out of time. The music's playing. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. To master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rupp. All right, everybody, we're going to do a second hour or so. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question, call me. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We're going to get to the calls in a little bit, but it is that time of year again. You are going to hear me hound you about your accounting, and I'm going to hound you, and I'm going to repeat myself over and over and over for the next many months. I do this every year. I start nagging people around the end of the year, the fourth quarter or so. This year I'm going to start a little earlier because this is so important and so few owner-operators are doing this. It's fairly easy. We are going to make it super easy for you But you've got to do a little bit of the hard work. You've got to take the first step. And I'm going to tell you what your options are. We have more options this year for accounting than before. But you've got to take the first step, and you've got to sign up for something. Don't wait. Many people think, well, you know, the year's almost over. I'm going to wait till January. Don't do that, because then you're going to be behind the curve again. Get signed up for one of our programs now, and let us go back and do all of 2015. Then you start 2016 way ahead of the curve, and you're going to be ready for taxes. Now is the time. That's why we talk about it now. Now is the time to get a bookkeeping program in place, get 2015 completely caught up and done, and go into 2016 ahead of the curve. It is the single most important thing you can do to really take your business to the next level and make it profitable and reduce the amount of money you have to send to the federal government for all those taxes. We all want to do that. So we have a couple programs. We are going to make it easy and inexpensive to get caught up for 2015. Let me give you an idea of how this would work. If you signed up for our startup program right now, which is $25, what's going to happen is for $25, you can go all the way back to January, get all of your paperwork together for January of 2015. That would be your receipts, your settlements, everything. Send that to us. We will do all of the data entry for the first month as part of that $25. You're not going to pay anything else. We'll set up all of your bookkeeping. We'll do the entire first month for you, and then we'll kind of be there to guide you and teach you how to do it. That's all part of the program. Then you would be able to catch up the rest of the year at no charge. You're going to get February, March, April, May, June, July, August, all free. You're going to start doing your own, and we'll get you all caught up, and we'll help you. And then in September, in October, you would start paying $19 a month, and you're done. We'll get you completely caught up for the year for $50 or less. Then you're going to be ready for taxes. You're going to have numbers for your business. It really is the single most important thing you could do right now. Don't wait, though. Get signed up now. Get caught up now. And you're going to have your best tax year ever. Now, we've also started another program. We are in the early stages of releasing it, so you can. I'm going to give you a phone number. You can call, and we can tell you more about it. We can get you on the list. We have a lot of demand for this program, so we're launching it on October 1st, but we're getting some people into the. And that is what we refer to as our full-service accounting, where every month you will just send all the paperwork to us. You'll send the receipts, the settlements. We'll provide the envelopes. They're already going to be prepaid, pre-addressed, real easy. Stick all your stuff in there. Drop it at the fuel desk. Don't have to pay the postage or screw around weighing it. And when it gets here, we will do all the data entry for you. You will still have access to your account. So you can still go in and look at your business reports, your profit and loss statements, your tax report. We can look at it with you. If you've ever heard me review people's profit and loss or business report here on the air, that's how we do it. You call up, say, here's my account. I pull it up. We go over the numbers. We help you make better business decisions. And as part of that program, you're going to get your tax return done. That's all part of the price. Now, the full service, we haven't finalized pricing yet, but it's going to be around $80 a month, which will include your tax return. So that's all part of the program. At the end of the year, you don't have to do much of anything. We'll have all your numbers there. You fill out a simple tax organizer, we get your tax return done. So that is the full service. $19 a month, you do the data entry. $80 a month or so, we do the data entry, and on the full service, it also includes the price of your tax return, which is all done here in-house. So we have partnered with an outstanding accounting firm. We have a division that only does trucks, drivers and owner-operators, that's it. And you will get not only the best accounting possible. If you want to do the startup program, you can go right to the website, sign up and get started. That's letstruck.com. If you are interested in the full service and our tax service, give us a call. That number is 855-800-FUEL. This is the time of year. You're going to hear this a lot from me right now, so just go do it. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's head off to Georgia to get started. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. It's good to talk with you today. And again, I appreciate everything that you're doing for us drivers out here. Make a long story short, I was in a lease program, a terrible lease program, and I was able to pay my truck off. And I come over to Landstar, and my gross per mile is $1.69 a mile. And my cost is 99 cents a mile, which bringing me 70 cents a mile net, net revenue.
Wow.
And I think that is wonderful considering coming from the lease program where I was making 13 cents a mile net profit to 70 cents a mile.
Yeah.
And I tell you, and I do appreciate,
now,
I do, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we should just think about this for a second. So, you were making 13 cents a mile in the lease. I've seen it many, many times. Most guys don't even know that's how much they're making. So congratulations on knowing the numbers. And then now you're making 70 cents a mile. And in reality, aren't you doing the same job? I mean, isn't your day very, very similar to what it used to be? And yet you're making like 3.5 times as much money to do the same job. That is just crazy, but I love that.
Yes, sir. I mean, it definitely is, and it's a lot less stress also, knowing that I'm able to get out here and work and really get paid for it, and from being up under that lease program. And I tell you, when you say it's so important to know your numbers, that's one case that really brought me through this lease program just by knowing my numbers.
Yeah, fantastic. Great stuff. So, here's another way we could look at this. Sometimes I like to look at the extremes just because it points out what's possible. So you would have worked all year long in that lease program just to barely pay your bills. If you wanted to match what you made in the lease program now, you could work like 4 months out of the year.
Right.
Take 8 months off and still make about the same amount of money. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, sir. It definitely is. It definitely is, I tell you. And, I'm just so appreciative of you and the information that you provide to us. But, and honestly, I have to thank myself for doing the hard work. And that is paying attention to a lot of things that's going on. But my question is that I received my title to my truck. And
hold that thought. The music just started playing, so I'm going to get to a break. We'll come right back, and we will tackle that question. Don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Before the break, we were getting ready to talk about some titling issues. Steve, go ahead.
Okay. My title was, when I got my title back, you know, I had to send it off to have it put totally in my name, and it was out of the state of Oklahoma. And when Oklahoma sent it back to me, you know, it's in my name, and it got the state of Oklahoma on it. But by me being from Georgia, will I have to have it transferred over to Georgia, or how does that work?
You will. You'll have to take that title down, and Georgia will issue a new title. It's possible that you might end up paying some sales tax as well. No, you shouldn't, because you didn't just buy it. You just paid it off, and now you're going to transfer the title. So you shouldn't have to. It's just a paperwork thing. You know, Oklahoma used to be one of the best places in the country to title trucks. And there used to be services that you could pay them, and they would title your truck in Oklahoma for you, and there would be no sales tax, and then they would be the address if anything got sent. And I used to title all my trucks in Oklahoma. All the other states got mad because they were losing out on revenue, and they all sued Oklahoma, so Oklahoma had to stop doing that. So you will have to transfer it to your home state.
Okay. Okay, that was my question, and I do appreciate it so much. I really do.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the great story. I love stories like that. Now, there's somebody who, you know, you hear me bash the lease purchase programs all the time, and there's a reason why. Most guys in this were never ready to be in business. Nobody's teaching them how to do their numbers, how to run a business. And lots of guys are out there working for horrible net revenue, and they don't know it. That's what I want people to do. Do the work till you know how much you're making. Steve did that. He knew he was making 13 cents a mile. But he pushed through, he did the hard work, he paid the truck off, which is amazing, and now he's making almost four times that much money, which is, I love those stories. That's what gets me up in the morning. That's what gets me so excited about what I do. That's what I think about. You know, I've told you about my morning routine. When I wake up in the morning, I write down three things that I'm grateful for that day. I do this every morning. Now, my list is repeated over and over and over, but there are so many things to be grateful for. And one of the things that makes my list all the time is I am grateful for the opportunity to be able to help people change their life. That is just an amazing thing. It's exciting to wake up and think, okay, what can I do today? What can I learn to help somebody else? And I appreciate people like Steve. My list, when I wake up, what am I grateful for? I'm grateful that there are people who are listening and they go do the hard work. All I do is put out the information. You've got to go do the hard work. And when people do and they make life-changing decisions like that, that's what for me, that's what it's all about. That's what I get up for every morning. So I love hearing those stories. Let's go to Missouri. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. It's Michelle. Jim's kind of busy.
Okay.
I have a couple questions for you. The first one is about 1099 drivers. If they do not have to accept loads and they make their own schedules for themselves and their own home time, can I 1099 a driver?
Who owns the truck?
The company owns the truck.
Not the driver, right?
Not the driver, no.
Okay, so let me give you the correct answer, and then I'll tell you what the industry does, and you decide.
Okay.
If we read the rules, the regulations, it doesn't matter how much freedom you give the driver. They can make all the decisions they want, but if they don't own the equipment, they are an employee. I mean, that is
okay.
Pretty straightforward. If we read the rules, so they should be treated as an employee, taxes should be withheld, all of those things. But I've been in this industry 30 years, and I don't know that I've ever seen anybody get penalized for giving a driver a 1099, no matter how wrong it was. The IRS just seems to ignore it most of the time, and even when they audit it, they tend to let companies off the hook. Now, they can come in and do an audit and say, well, wait a minute, these guys should be employees. And the company will say, oh, we didn't know. Everybody else treats them as 1099s, and the IRS actually has a forgiveness program. If you had a reason why you were giving them a 1099, then they won't hold you accountable for the back taxes, but they will make you pay the driver as an employee going forward. So the right way is to pay them as an employee. That's the way I recommend. That's the way, you know, I think you should do it. But the industry has been doing things very differently and getting away with it for years.
Okay. My second question is, my home state is Florida, but we run our business out of Michigan because we haven't changed things. Should we change everything over to our home state now that we're living in Florida, or can we keep it up in Michigan, the business part of it out of Michigan, and still have our home state in Florida?
What is the business entity? Is it a corporation?
It's an S Corp.
Yeah, you could leave it in Michigan. I wouldn't recommend it, and for a lot of reasons. One, the tax laws are much better in Florida. Two, when you run a corporation, you can put a corporation in any state you want. But if you also operate the business out of a different state, then you're just complicating things. Because what would have to happen is you would stay a Michigan corporation, but because your offices and your operation are in Florida, you would also have to file in Florida as what's called a foreign corporation. Now you have to deal with two different states, and there's no reason to do that. It just complicates things, makes things more expensive. So move the corporation to Florida and have one state to deal with and no state income taxes.
Okay. All right. Thank you so very much, Kevin. You have a great day.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Tennessee. Gary, welcome to the program.
Well, hi. So I got a question on, I've been in the ketogenic diet. I've been in, well, lifestyle, I should say, for a little over somewhere between, I haven't been on a scale since I was home 2 weeks ago. At that time, I was down 14 pounds. I'm guessing I'm down close to 20 right now.
Excellent.
But my only issue I'm having is when I exercise, which I haven't had it since I tried calling in 2 days ago, or a couple shows ago, I should say. And when I was working out, if I bent over and stood back up, I would get lightheaded for a little bit.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, am I lacking something, or my something's, you know, because it hasn't happened since then, but
it's not uncommon. There are two things that I've talked about that I recommend measuring. I really recommend it for anybody, but if you're on the ketogenic diet, I really recommend it for a while. And both of them are pretty easy to measure, and you can buy the devices pretty cheaply for less than $50, it's certainly less than $100. You can get a blood pressure cuff and a glucose meter. So one of the most common causes of lightheadedness or dizziness is low blood pressure. When was the last time you had your blood pressure checked?
Probably a year ago.
And are you typically normal, or have you ever had high blood pressure?
It's always been normal. I'm always, every time I've ever gone in for any of that stuff, I've always been considered athletic.
Okay, so you probably have lower than normal blood pressure, and it's very possible that the ketogenic diet lowered it even more. Now, there are no real dangers to low blood pressure. Low blood pressure is very healthy. The one side effect is lightheadedness or dizziness, especially if you're working out or bending over. Your body tends to adjust to it, and that might be happening already since you're saying you haven't noticed it in a couple days. I would get yourself an automatic blood pressure cuff and just check it. Check it before you work out, check it after, check it a couple times during the day. My guess is it's probably just a little low, and you might want to add salt to your diet. Let me get to a break. I'll come back, and we'll talk about that just a little bit more. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to Tennessee. So, Gary, a couple things that you're going to want to check. One, measure your blood pressure. The other thing that happens on a ketogenic diet is our body gets rid of a lot of excess water. So we can be fully hydrated, but our body's holding less water than it used to. And that's one of the reasons why a ketogenic diet lowers your blood pressure. It's the same reason doctors give diuretics to get rid of excess water. That's just not the natural way to do it. Because what happens is the more water that's in your body, your blood is part water, and the more water, the more volume of blood you have, which increases your blood pressure. On a ketogenic diet, you have a more natural level of water, but it's also easy to end up with a little less than you should have. So you want to look for foods that are high in sodium and potassium both. You can use good sea salt and salt your food more. You can even put a little bit of salt in water and drink it a couple times a day. You can drink some bouillon. Potassium you can get from things like avocados, mushrooms. You know, people always think of bananas. Bananas aren't really that high in potassium, and they're high in sugar. So you avocados, mushrooms, dark leafy greens, some beans depending on, you know, your level of carbohydrates. But get more salt and more potassium and check your blood sugar, and that should go away.
Okay, this is kind of funny, you know, because it was like 2 days ago or whatever when I called in about it, and then I was eating walnuts that weren't salted, and I just switched over, you know.
Yep.
So that's what I've been
Perfect.
Munching on. I haven't had it happen since then. So I was wondering,
the salt,
I was trying to figure out what it was. The salt.
Yep, the salt probably takes care of it because the salt helps your body hold more water. We've been told forever that salt's bad for us. It's going to raise our blood pressure. And on a typical diet and eating bad salt, like table salt and all the processed foods, that salt is bad for us. But when you go to a ketogenic diet, we actually have to increase our salt intake. And as long as we make it good, you know, quality sea salt, then we're going to be fine. So I have a feeling, you know, your body might have even been telling you, hey, I need a little more salt. You ate it, and things are looking better already.
Yep, and I was working out when it was really hot out, too.
Outside. That'll do it. Yep.
Yep. So that'll explains a lot. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You know, it's interesting, the results on this diet, lifestyle, eating ways, however you want to say it, They're very, very consistent. People experience all the same things. Blood sugar stabilizes, which is amazing. Your appetite becomes so much better controlled. You get rid of those crazy cravings. It's off. Blood pressure lowers, A1C lowers. It's all very consistent. So it's pretty amazing to see it happening. Let's go to Nevada. Chris, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. Hey, what's on your mind today?
Got a couple questions regarding the diet. I got some keto sticks for the first time. I've been doing it for about 3 weeks, and I got some keto strips, and I read the little literature they gave you, and it said if you show moderate to call your doctor or diabetes educator immediately. So that was my thought.
You know, it's kind of funny because the ketone strips and the ketone meters were all designed for one very specific thing. They were designed for type 1 diabetics or insulin-dependent type 2 diabetics. People who have type 2 diabetes so bad that they have to take insulin. They were designed to test for ketones to make sure those people don't go into ketoacidosis, which is a totally different thing. But you still measure the ketones in your blood. So all of the products, all of the strips, that's what they were designed for. So now that we're using them to say, hey, no, we want the ketones in our blood, it's weird because you will see literature like that. Doctors will freak out if they see ketones in your blood, even though it's a totally natural condition. It is amazing. Doctors know almost nothing about this.
Yeah. And then I have another question. Like I said, I've been doing it for about 3 weeks, staying away from all no breads, no grain, and very little sugar, with the exception of just sugars that are in foods. You know, you can't seem to get away from that. And
right,
like I said, I've been testing my you know, keto levels, and I've only hit, you know, a moderate level once, and the rest of the times I've, you know, maybe traces. So, but I've been losing weight. I mean, is
okay.
That, does it matter if you're in ketosis or not? I mean, is it still healthy, you know, eating, you know, a high-fat diet even though I'm not in ketosis?
I think you are in ketosis. Here's the thing. We can tell a couple ways. One, when you're losing weight like that, how is your hunger? Can you wake up in the morning and go several hours without eating and not feel like you're going to chew somebody's arm off?
Yes, I mean, and I'm only eating like maybe twice a day. Like, and I'll get up, and I love, by the way, the bulletproof coffee. Oh, my God, that stuff is awesome. You know?
I know.
I do like 2 cups of bulletproof coffee, and then come, you know, 11 o'clock, you know, 12 o'clock, it's like, you know, I eat breakfast, you know, I kind of feel,
yep,
a little bit hungry. So I eat, and then, you know, I eat a dinner. I may have a little couple snacks in between, maybe some nuts or some of the pork rind things. And then I'll eat a dinner, you know, just a vegetable, grilled vegetables and some meat, and you know, and then I'm good.
Yep.
By the time I eat, it's like 15 hours later or something.
Excellent. So here's the thing. There are 3 different ways to test for ketones in our body, and we're actually testing 3 totally different chemicals. And I won't go through the names because they're the typical long, confusing names, but we can test blood for ketones, we can test urine for ketones, we can test our breath for ketones, but we're testing 3 totally different things. The blood is the most accurate because the blood is the ketone body itself that we use for energy. When we test our urine or our breath, we're actually testing byproducts of ketones, waste products. You can use the urine strips early when you first go into ketosis, and you will see the ketones in your urine. But after your body becomes adapted to burning ketones as its energy, you no longer excrete them into your urine. There is no waste product anymore. Your body is burning them. That's a good sign, but then the urine strips don't work anymore. And this happens all the time. People will say, oh, no, I'm not in ketosis. No, you are. And your body's using all the ketones for energy. So normally what I say is if your appetite is under control, if you have that nice, steady energy all day long, and you're losing weight, and you feel good, ketosis, and you just keep doing what you're doing. And I've played around with it. Like, I'll eat a fairly high carbohydrate day. Now, I won't go crazy, but I'll eat a lot more vegetables, and then I'll throw in maybe a handful of fruit and, maybe a sweet potato or something like that, and I will knock myself out of ketosis, and I can feel it because my hunger starts to come back. And it's not a big deal. I don't feel bad. I just start craving a little bit more food, and then I'll say, okay, I can feel the difference without even testing. And then I'll go back to the high-fat, low-carbohydrate. My appetite comes back under control. I feel good. So you can move in and out of ketosis. It's not a big deal. But I think what you're seeing is you're in ketosis. You just don't have the waste products anymore, so the urine strips aren't showing it.
Yeah, because I didn't test myself for the first time until, like, two and a half weeks into this, you know, new way of eating
right.
and stuff. So maybe, you know, but, I mean, God, it's awesome. And then, hey, you ever seen those sugar documentaries they got out, like Fed Up and that other sugar?
Hold that thought. I'm going to get to a break. I'll come back. We'll talk about that. But, yeah, I think it's awesome, too. Being in ketosis is an amazing way to be. You can't describe it to somebody. You just have to experience it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the calls. I was talking with Chris in Nevada. Chris, you were saying something about the sugar documentaries. What was that?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you got a chance to see those or if you've heard about them. One is called Fed Up, and then I think I can't remember the other one, but it's interesting. It goes into detail about how the food companies, you know, put extra sugar into food to create like this bliss factor, you know, and how they hide all the sugar because, you know, you've said there's like 50 some odd different names for sugar nowadays, you know, and it's,
right.
I haven't seen them. I'm on my way home now. I'm going to watch one. One's on Netflix and the other one's on iTunes. You know, and I think Katie Couric does the Fed Up one, and it sounds pretty good.
That was a good one, and the newest one that just came out in July of this year, and you can find it on iTunes, it's called That Sugar Film. That's a good one. It is absolutely amazing. You used that term. They actually call it the bliss point. So what they found early on with processed food was the more sugar they added, the more people wanted the food. And then they got to a point where it was just too much. They did find that upper limit, and the big food companies did like millions and millions of dollars worth of research, bringing people in and doing this crazy extensive testing to find the perfect level in each one of their foods, the most sugar they could put in that would make you crave that food. And it's in ketchup, it's in barbecue sauce, it's in soup, it's in breads. Virtually everything packaged has sugar, and the big companies have dialed in that sugar point for one reason, to make you buy more of that food.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm going to watch it when I get home. I'm on vacation, so. But, yeah, I was like, wow, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But anyways, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Keep it up. Call me and tell me how it's going. I love the stories of people doing this because it's so consistent. People are seeing amazing results. They're losing the weight. They're feeling better. They're sleeping better. Their energy levels are better. Let's go to Ohio. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call today, Kevin.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I have, I think I have a strategy for TAC. I want to run it by you and just find out if what I'm thinking makes sense and if it's legal. My strategy is this. I want to hire my kids to do some legitimate work for my business, and I know that the money that they earn will be tax-free because they're all in school still. And I don't have to pay any Social Security or anything like that. I don't have to treat them like a regular employee because they're family members, correct?
That is absolutely correct. And that's a huge exception. So anytime you were to hire an employee, you would have to pay Social Security, Medicare, all that stuff. But if they are, and I'll go through the list here, they can be your children, your foster children, your stepchildren, or your grandchildren. And those are really, you can't hire your cousin this way or your brother-in-law, but your that list, children, adopted, step, and grandchildren, all are an exception. When you hire them to do, like you said, legitimate work in your business, you get a huge break on taxes because you don't have to pay Social Security and Medicare. They won't pay any taxes on this money because you're going to pay them right at the limit so that they won't be taxed. So it really is a great way for them to get tax-free money and you as a business to get a big tax break without incurring Social Security and Medicare.
Okay, so now I have a strategy to double dip on that. This is the part where I think, can I do this? Instead of paying them actual cash money or a check, what I'm thinking is that I would open up a Roth IRA for each one of them, and their pay will automatically go into the Roth tax-free, and it ends up being tax-free when they retire.
Forever. This is
probably
the single best tax avoidance strategy on the planet. I mean, I just don't know of any other way to get completely tax-free money as earnings and then let it grow like crazy and never pay a penny of tax on any of this money. Let me give you an example of the power of the numbers. And this is totally legitimate, to answer your question. Nothing illegal about this at all. In fact, this is taught. So way back when, my son's 27 now, when he was about 9, started doing this. We paid him to work in the business, and he was basically making about $65 a month because he wasn't doing a lot. He was only 9. You know, he was doing some accounting in the office, not accounting, just like sorting and filing some paperwork, stuff that he could legitimately do. And it wasn't a lot, a couple hours a week, and he made $65 a month, and we put it in a Roth. And I showed him how if he would just keep that up for the rest of his life, you don't have to save any more than just $65 a month. We started when you were 9. We quit when you were 18. You keep doing it the rest of your life. On a fairly conservative estimate, using like 8% return, at 65 years old, he would have had over $5 million in the account. And
wow.
It could have all been tax-free.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And people say, no, that's not possible. 65 times 12 is this much a year times this many years. Doesn't even come close. You only put in a
compounding.
Couple $100,000. Yeah, it's
compounding.
Compound
it's the word of
growth.
The future.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Literally,
and
think about it. Compounding, the word of
that's
the
right. That is exactly right. And people say, oh, no, that's not possible. No, it is possible. It's just math. And when you do the math, you understand why investing early is so important. And with the Roth and children, it is an amazing tool.
What a home run. And I am kicking myself for not thinking of this strategy years and years ago. But
yeah,
you can't worry about what you haven't done. You can only worry about what you can do.
That's right. That's right. And it is an amazing strategy. You know, since we're talking about investing, I got an interesting email this morning, and I love this show and what I do for so many reasons, but the reach of the show is, I never know. I don't know how many people are listening to me. We don't get any numbers on that. We don't get any feedback. I don't know if I have 25,000 listeners or 225,000. I have no idea. But not long, and I think I might have been talking to you about this, America's Best 401k, it's from the book. So
yes.
We talked about it maybe once or twice on the air in the last 3 or 4 months. I haven't spent a lot of time on it. I've recommended the book, but I haven't really mm-hmm. gotten down to the details. But one day we mentioned it. I get an email from the company, America's Best 401k, which is actually one of Tony Robbins, is one of the partners in that company. In the email, I forget right. the guy's title, but he said, hey, we've been getting calls and people say they've been hearing about us on your show. Thanks. We appreciate it. You know, we'd like to talk to you about some other things. So we mentioned it one time
cool.
or a couple times maybe. Yeah. So I love that, and it is a great program. I am going to reach out to this guy and see if maybe we can put something special together for our listeners.
Hey, maybe they do something where they come to the CMC and do some finance stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, it's the beauty of the tribe. We're putting out the information. You guys are using it. You're talking about it. You're supporting the companies we talk about. They're not a partner company. I get nothing from that. If you go open a 401k, I get nothing. But it's a great resource, and it could be a great partnership for us. So that was exciting. Oh, and
excellent.
Speaking of that, the music's playing. I've got to get out of here. I'm all out of time. The Roth is powerful. Paying your children is powerful. These are the kind of tax strategies we teach at the CMC. It's the kind of tax strategies that we will put together if you are in our program, whether it's Profit Gage is doing it yourself or our new full-service accounting program and tax service. So call us up, 855-800-FUEL. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable, be fit and healthy, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rupp. All right, everybody, don't forget, Kim and I will be doing Destination Health later this afternoon. We had a lot of health-related calls here today, but we can do pure health, fitness, ketogenic diet, exercise, you name it. Kim and I will tackle it and answer your questions. So join us. It's today, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. real simple. You just dial in and sit and listen or jump in and ask a question just like you did here. The number is 347-324-3285. If you forget the time or the phone number, just go to the website, letstruck.com. It's right there on the homepage. We'll see you then. Thanks.